What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Happy November, people. We are into the final 8 Wednesdays of the year. So if you haven't done your New Year's resolution, it's about time we start, isn't it, people? And if you're a regular listener, then welcome back. And if you're new around here, then here's a small bit of information about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation, and I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football. I've been in the health and fitness industry for over a decade, and I've been helping people feel better, move smarter, and get amazing results. If you are sick of dodgy influencers or people with amazing genetics giving you health advice online, you are definitely in the right place, because every week I help you cut through the confusion of the internet. We discuss relevant topics and I help you get clarity on these topics so that you can make better decisions in your own health and fitness journey. Each week I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and bust myths. Now, last week, I caught up with Dr. Alex George to speak about looking after our mental health during the changing seasons. Dr. Alex George, good morning. How are you? Are you well?
I'm really well, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for joining us. Right. So we're going to be speaking about prioritizing our mental health and physical wellness routines. Right. So let's just dive straight into everything and we'll get straight into it. So why do so many of us struggle to maintain healthy habits once the clocks go back?
Yeah, so there's been research actually by Holland and Barrett into this, and around a third of people, when the clocks come back, struggle to maintain their kind of well-being habits, so kind of the time outdoors or their exercise or their social connection stuff drops off. And, you know, about 60% of them are saying that the shorter days, the darkness, the cold weather are really linking into that. And around half saying that instead they end up spending more time on the sofa at home. And I think the first thing I'd say is that that's really natural. Don't never shame yourself for that. I think our natural instinct when it's cold and we're outside is to spend less time outside. But I think what's important is to recognize the impact that can have. So we are learning so much more, I think, as a society, that our physical and our mental health is benefited by lots of connection, by eating relatively well, getting enough sleep, being outdoors, having natural light, and moving our bodies. Those are the kind of core aspects of health. And what we're seeing is that we go into the winter, that gets dropped off. So what we need to do is acknowledge it, acknowledge the challenge, and then plan. And the Scandinavian countries do this pretty well. They kind of acknowledge the fact it's difficult. They make their homes very comfy and cozy so that when they are indoors, it's a nice place to be. It's supportive for our well-being. But they also make sure they plan things like, you know, exercise classes, opportunities to be around other people, keep going with the exercise, wrapping up, you know, literal things like, you know, if it's wet outside, going out for the morning walk or midday walk and it's not that nice weather, it's really wrapping up and, you know, being prepared almost to kind of get out there and spend time outside. And it is important, and then it does matter. Other little things you can look at as well. So actually, Holland Barrett's got these sunshine booths that I visited one. They got in, I think, Cardiff, London and Manchester in their stores that you can check out. And basically within them, they've got the light therapy lamps, and people talk about this. And so I think it's worth like mentioning, you know, how it works. So
LED lights, is it?
Yeah. So some people call it that. But yeah, light lamps is the kind of technical phrase. Funny enough, they emit light. So basically it's white. It's white light is the frequency of light. So 10,000 lux and above. And you're supposed to kind of have 20-30 minutes in the morning. The reason it benefits is because natural light is important, not just because it's nice to be outside, but because also natural light hits the back of our eyes, our retinal cells, which then tells the brain it's morning, it's daytime, sets our circadian rhythm, so our 24-hour clock, and it suppresses melatonin. That's important because melatonin is our sleep hormone. We want melatonin to be high in the evening, low in the morning. When it's dark and miserable, we're not outside, the brain's confused. So melatonin can be high, which why often in the winter people feel very groggy and sleepy. And also light is very important at boosting serotonin, so our mood hormone. So 20-30 minutes in the morning, these lamps can be helpful for some people in boosting the mood and making you feel better. So often it's just little things, it's small things that kind of add up and make a difference. But, you know, it's acknowledging it's the first bit of it. I think as Brits we do moan about the weather, as we should, but we don't sometimes acknowledge what is happening and what perhaps we need to do.
Yeah, and do you think Scandinavian countries, because obviously in the winter months they spend so much of their time in the darkness, are a really good kind of model for us to kind of look at?
Definitely, definitely. I actually had on my podcast, the Stompcast, I had someone who's an expert in kind of winter well-being, and was talking about this, that they are just so much better prepared because they know that that time is coming and it's going to be really dark. So they acknowledge the fact it's going to be difficult, which is the first thing, because you cannot take an action or change something without acknowledging that there is something that you need to work on. So exactly. They know it's coming, and then they make plans. As I say, they make the internal home as comfortable as possible, having like candles and making it cozy and making that environment somewhere you enjoy being, because you're going to spend more time indoors. But they also make sure they create plans, particularly for kind of social connections, a big one for them. So in the summer, if you finish work and it's a sunny day, you say, oh, come on, let's go to the park, it's lovely. In the winter, you just don't really do that, or you end up, you know, indoors in environments. So it's thinking, right, well, I need to plan instead. So what about an exercise class on a Saturday? Or why not a coffee and walk with my mates on a Saturday? You have to basically plan a bit more. There's less natural opportunity for connection. So to counteract, you have to kind of plan it, basically, which the people that don't like planning can be a bit boring, but you basically need to.
No, and I totally get that. And with obviously everything you've mentioned so far, what small realistic changes do you think people can actually make to keep active without, you know, braving the cold? I know you said wrapping up more, you know, but you might have some really kind of practical ideas.
Yeah, so I talk about bookending your day. So the middle of the day is your stress, it's your work, it's your things you need to do. So bookend it with things that are good for your body and your brain, basically. So in the morning, I get up, grab my dog Rolo, and we head outside for a 15, 20 minute walk. Even if the weather's not very nice, we get outside because he needs to and it's good for me. And then, you know, in the middle of the day, you've got your kind of work and so on. And then I end the day, and that's what I'll do today, with going to the gym. Actually, to be fair, it's ironically quite sunny at the moment, so I might go out for a run later. But I end the day with a form of movement. So the trigger for the habit is the working day ending. I stood before I kind of end up on the couch in a comfortable place, and it's very difficult to get up from there. I put my movement in there for that part of the day. And then after that, it is learning to unwind well in the evening. The big one, I would say, in the winter, and what we see going up, is phone usage. So the average 25-year-old is on their phone around 6 hours a day. That's a lot. And in the winter, we can see people's screen times rocketing higher. And that's really important. So some of the winter stuff is about what you do, and some of it's about what you don't do. So it's just being aware that we have a tendency to be on our phones. So trying to swap that out with things that are creative, you know, painting, drawing, reading, playing music, anything really that's not being on your phone, and having a really good wind down routine for bed. And that can be as simple as having low lights in the room, you know, having a bath for a shower before bed to kind of relax you and stuff. And then, you know, and making sure that, again, we're not having anything too stimulating before bed in terms of screen time. So sometimes it's just simple things. Often it's not, in well-being, we often look for these big things to kind of fix how we feel, but most of it is the compounding effect of little things. And I think when we realize that and put the little things in action, you get much bigger results, I think, without sounding cliche.
No, I totally agree with you. And I think, like, being, like you said, you know, some people don't like being organized or structured or planned, but I think we both know, and obviously you know probably better than anyone else, how important it is to have that structure. I think what you said as well, kind of planning the end of your day, is something really, really good, because how many people do you think they get home from work and they kick their shoes off and they get on the sofa? I used to have a thing when I worked in professional sport. My rule was 30 minutes. I would get in, I would be knackered, I'd have 30 minutes, and I had to be out the door at the gym. Brilliant. That was my rule. Just little things like that. Just structure, because I knew if I stop, I drop.
Exactly. I mean, what you're talking about there is perfect in terms of discipline. So your kind of habit formation is motivation at the start, which is you wanting to do something. Motivation on average lasts 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes even less. Then you need to have the discipline come in. Discipline's not about, you know, it's not the carrot, the stick. It's just giving yourself a framework that allows you to stick at the habit. So that's a great example. Other people say, like, taking the gym kit to work. So on the way home, they walk past the gym, going to the gym, trying to make it as easy as possible to stick at the discipline. And then when you're disciplined for a period of time, it becomes a habit. The research studies say that's about 66 days, convenient number, that the habit takes to be formed. But effectively, it takes a couple of months. Some habits take a few weeks, but most habits, like exercise, will take a few months. So if you can stick at it for that period of time, you're more likely then to continue. And that is important. But one thing I would say, though, is that you don't have to have perfection around it. I mean, it's about being consistent, but not perfect. I mean, you know, 80% is enough, you know, and you know, and a, on a Friday, if you're like, do you know what, I really don't want to go to the gym tonight, it's a lovely evening, I'm going to put, you know, Harry Potter on, whatever it would be, fine, that's absolutely fine. It's about what you do on average. It's not about being militant with it. And that's important, because then you get into all or nothing thinking and thinking, well, if I don't do it perfect today, what's the point? And that's not helpful at all.
No, and you know what's really nice is everything you're saying, what you're saying right now is everything that I preach to my clients. I say 80-20 split is perfect. You know, it's all about consistency over long periods of time. All or nothing never works.
No.
Because you always go back to old habits. So sprinkle a little bit of fun and what you want to do into your life, and before you know it, you've got this perfect balance and everything flourishes around you.
I'm glad you say this. There's stuff like, you know, people talk about sleep routine. Like, well, I need to sleep. You know, that we know that science says the best thing to do is to get up and go to bed at the same time. That's great, but life happens. So what are you going to do on a Friday when your friends say, do you want to go to the, you know, let's go to the theatre. There's a great new show on. Let's go to the theatre, but it finishes at 11, but your bedtime's 9:30 or 10. Are you going to not go to the theatre? No, of course, go to the theatre. Yes. You know, it's really important. That's where the 80-20 comes in. It's not about what you do on one night a week. It's about what you do for 5 or 6 nights the week that matter. So I'd really say that to people. Just don't fall into the trap. And this is where January can be difficult with New Year's. Is sometimes, you know, some people love New Year's resolutions. That's fine. But sometimes that can really kind of push this idea of, right, I've got to be militant and really rigid about this. But actually, flexibility is one of the best ways to actually maintain any kind of habit change.
Yeah, and then you get to sprinkle the fun stuff, right? And that's exactly what, life's short, so we got to have as much fun as we can, but without kind of going too crazy all the time.
Yeah.
Right, back onto the topics that we were talking about. So the lack of sunlight and shorter days, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how much would you say that affects our mood and energy levels? Like, quite a lot.
Have to give it a number, but I think, you know,
maybe not numerical.
Well, put it this way, around 1 million people in the UK are affected by seasonal affective disorder. And, you know, that's, I mean, obviously that's quite a big number, but if you actually think about it this way, if I spoke to my family and friends, I thought about my mum and my dad and my best mates, and I thought of a conversation, said to them, like, you know, what, how do you find the winters? I'd say 80% of them would say the winters are more difficult, maybe even more. So that gives you an idea. And that will vary from people, for being a little bit annoying that it's shorter days and the weather's bad, all the way through to actually really affecting their kind of health. So I think for people, it's a big effect. Vitamin D, for example, is very important for energy levels. Being outside, being in nature, being around people energizes you and motivates you. It's like the idea, you know, of often people think that movement makes you tired. Movement doesn't make you tired, it actually energizes you. So, you know, being outside, being with people is really important. So I think it is a huge impact. We can't do anything about the clocks. We can't do anything about the weather, but we can control our own controllables. So I think it's, like I'm saying, I think it really is about acknowledge it's difficult, make a plan, build your own kind of toolkit, what that looks like. What is it that helps you through the winter? You know, you can try things like the light lamp therapy. You know, certainly consider vitamin D. That's very important. You know, check obviously before taking any supplements with the doctor, but vitamin D is generally recommended for most people, particularly around the winter. And yeah, just build up that kind of toolkit that supports you through that time, and talk to people as well. Ask people, like, what works for them? What do your mates do? You know, surprising, like, you can learn a lot just from just talking to the people in your circle as to what they use that helps support them, because you'll find a lot of people going through the same thing.
And what signs are there that you might have low vitamin D? Are there any in particular?
So I think it's quite non-specific, because a lot of the signs you might see can be caused by lots of things. But, you know, typically when we're talking about kind of, for example, seasonal affective disorder, so winter depression, it's kind of low mood, low energy, lethargy, and so on. So low vitamin D can have similar symptoms to that, really. So kind of, low energy levels. But obviously that's quite difficult to tie down, because there's lots of reasons people's energies might be low. So that is why the NHS says that unless you're told otherwise by your doctor's advice, that you should take it through the winter months and end of autumn through the winter months, vitamin D, because so many people are affected by it. So it's trying to it's trying to react to the most, or plan for the most likely things that might affect your kind of mood levels. But, you know, as a simple test measure, you know, if you woke up in the morning and it was dark in your room and you went straight on the laptop and started working immediately and going on Zoom calls, how do you feel? You know, I would feel, I know that when I've done that before, I feel lethargic, tired, confused. I just feel like I've not even had a moment. And whereas if I get up and go outside, how do I feel when I come back? I'm energized, happy, motivated, ready to start the day. So obviously that's anecdotal experience, but it's a good way, I say to people in general, if you're trying to work out what works, do something and ask yourself, how do I feel afterwards? With food, I'm sure you talk about this with food and stuff. It's like, if you're going to eat something, after you've how do you feel when you eat it? How do you feel immediately after you've eaten that thing? And then the next day, how do you feel? And you can score it 1 to 10, very simple scoring system. Then change what you're eating to something else and see how you feel. Do the same thing. And then you quickly work out what foods help you feel good and what foods make you feel less good. And it's not, again, not about avoiding all of those all the time, because you might want to treat or whatever it is, but it's going, well, actually, I know when I eat this kind of food, I personally don't feel good. Whereas if I have this, I feel great.
Yeah. And I think with the winters, right, it's not our first winter, but trial and error, like we as, you know, we as humans, I think, are becoming so much more switched on, and we care so much more about our health and well-being. I think things like this are becoming more and more kind of at the forefront, especially when the winter months are coming. It is now, in my eyes, you know, like you said, trial and error, kind of seeing what works. Didn't enjoy that, but actually that made me feel good, so I know that I've got to do a little bit more of that before, you know, I can rule it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, speaking of foods, obviously you mentioned food. Are there any foods or nutrients people need help boosting with their immune systems and their energy throughout the colder months?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a slightly boring answer, but important. It's about trying to make sure you have as much colours of fruit and veg as you possibly can. Because like to single out certain vitamins is difficult because they all play a role, you know, in vitamin C, in vitamin K, vitamin D, all of these things are important. You know, vitamin D, for example, you can get some from oily fish, but really in reality, it's quite difficult to get enough vitamin D from those sources. But in general, and that's where supplements can come in, but supplements' role is to supplement food. So getting the food right is an important starter. So it's thinking about looking at a plate. Have I got protein on my plate? Have I got some sort of carb that's ideally one that will, you know, give you longer energy? So, you know, it might be something like brown rice, sweet potato, whatever it might be. And do I have a colorful variety of, you know, veg on the plate, from your peppers and so on to your mushrooms, greens and things? It sounds really boring, but actually it is the foundational thing that matters. My grandmother always used to say, and I remember like kind of rolling my eyes, look, you need to have a colorful plate. Come on, the rainbow plate. And I'd be like, come on, Nan, this is boring. But actually she was right, and bear in mind she was she was saying this well before well-being was even a word that anyone talked about. But she was right, like eating what would grow in your garden, or you know, what someone could farm, and making sure you have that, particularly through the winter months, but in general, is really important. And I think if we can go back to that as much as possible, that would help. Obviously, people are talking a lot about ultra processed foods. Look, I believe, in my opinion, that it's impossible to cut them all out. It would be very difficult to have a realistic life to do that. You know, there's varying levels of whether, you know, how, you know, quote unquote bad some are versus others. But I think it's as best as you possibly can, trying to bring in where possible, you know, your unprocessed stuff that's greens and veggies. And I think all of that stuff supports your general health, not just in the winter, but, you know, all year round, I guess.
Yeah. And right. So my next question, I'm going to quickly divert. So going back onto what we said at the start, you know, about habits and starting your day and whatnot, walking pads, as days get darker, are you a fan of a walking pad? Do you think it's a really good idea? Yeah. I suggest it because I think it's safer than going out, depending on where you live. If you don't live near any streetlights or anything like that, then I think it's a good idea. But what are your views on them, especially in the winter months, to keep moving or just to keep energized and exercised?
Well, look, safety is the main priority. So as you said, I think you've got to make an assessment. Is it safe for me to walk in the dark? If there's any concerns, take the safest option. So obviously walking pads do have a role there. And in ideal, you want to be outside, because we know that, obviously, I've literally talked about all the kind of important points of why having natural light is important, but having some sort of movement's also helpful. You could even potentially combine that with, you know, light lamps, for example, to get some of the benefits of natural light. But yeah, absolutely, even that is beneficial, you know, and having things like images of being able to see nature is helpful. So if you can do the walking pad by a window, that's helpful. There's studies that have been done that have shown that patients who are near the window in hospitals recover quicker than those that are away from the window. So even seeing nature can be beneficial towards your health. And quite a few studies have replicated that finding. So it's the best option is being outside walking, But we have to mitigate for safety, weather, and all those things. So the next best thing is important. Is it important to keep moving? Yes. So walking pads definitely have a role.
Okay. Right. We are super short time, so we're probably going to only have time for maybe one more question.
Cool. Awesome.
What are the key pillars of winter wellness that people should purely focus on? You've brushed upon lots of information. Let's maybe a few bullet points just to close off.
Try and find opportunity for being outdoors at some point in your day. If that's not in the morning, try and get it to be like 10 o'clock to pop outside, or lunchtime at work. If you're like working in a hospital, like I used to in A&E, it wouldn't be possible to get out in the morning until I had my break. So I'd go outside at lunchtime. So get natural light when you can. Always try and think in the winter months, find opportunities for natural light. If you can't get enough, think about things. Use tech, for example, the lamp lights we've talked about. Try and keep up with the movement. We often move less in winter, so find opportunities to move. And even better if you can move with other people. So weekend coffee meets, or going to gym classes. It's finding opportunities for movement. And I think the third thing is just actually acknowledging that it's a difficult time of year. That, you know, so I go back to this point, you know, the Scandinavians acknowledge that it's difficult and they plan for it. So we can take that approach and it will help us.
Amazing. Honestly, Alex, thank you so much for your time. You've been a star, super insightful. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.
Fubar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on Fubar Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
All areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose, and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness, and I need him to be kind.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
Maura Higgins.
That's a Jordy Shaw thing.
Has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush, because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers, because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with Georges. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on Fubar Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Joining me now on Zoom is Jeffrey Boadi, who is a nutrition advocate and creator of his debut cookbook, Plant Fuel. His new book proves that a plant-based or vegan diet isn't a barrier to building strength and making gains. It's actually the fuel that can provide you power to give you your best performance yet. Jeffrey, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Really, really appreciate it. So we're just going to jump straight into this, okay? What inspired you to write your debut book?
So it's really an extension of my experience shifting towards a plant-based diet back in 2017. So just a bit of context, I played a lot of sports when growing up, played a bit of semi-pro football, traveled to Norway, Austria, and America as well. So obviously before that was kind of meat for protein, milk for calcium, very much eating a ton of animal products growing up in a Ghanaian household. And I watched a documentary, ironically called What the Health. That kind of just shifted my mind. There was something about that which kind of led me towards trying a plant-based diet and just kind of seeing, because the documentary was kind of positioning the benefits of a plant-based diet in terms of reducing chronic disease risk. So literally overnight made the switch. I remember my last meal was a nice prawn stir fry. Tasted amazing.
Great choice.
And after 2 weeks, I felt incredible. I felt like my sleep was better. I felt like I had more energy. I felt lighter, more clarity of thought. Recovery from training was better. And I think my desire was to make sure that I could still do this from a position of, can I still build muscle? Can I still perform in the gym? Can I still be fit playing sports, things like that? So it took me down a rabbit hole of looking into loads of research, looking into how to optimize protein intake, key nutrients, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was kind of just sharing recipes on social media, sharing my experience, sharing my kind of journey. And it kind of grew from there, really. And then people were really interested in the recipes and things that I was, kind of sharing. And 8 years later, we've kind of come up with a book, which I feel I want so many people to get a hold of. I don't want this to just be for people who are plant-based. I want to show that, if you want to get more plant-based dishes into your diet, if you're someone who's a busy professional, if you're someone who wants to explore different means of nutrition, this can be the way to do it. It's just really an extension of my ethos around plant-based nutrition, flavorful, nutrient-rich, easy to make, very simple dishes. That's kind of where the desire and the kind of, it all kind of really started.
Okay. And I mean, I'm not vegan, I'm not pescatarian, polypescatarian. My life is all about balance, and that's what I teach and I'm an advocate for.
Yeah.
But knowledge is power, right? So there's no reason why I have loads of people I've worked with and people that I haven't worked with that do, I think it's Veganuary. So in January, they just do vegan only. And I know some people that do really well, some people that struggle, and it's like a flip of the coin. But, I'm all for talking with individuals that are, inspiring and interested in, something different. So how does your book aim to change people's perspectives on veganism in itself?
Well, I think first of all, my approach from the outset has never been to convert people to go plant-based per se. My approach is, this is what I'm learning. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm sharing. If you want to come on board with it and see how it works for you, that's absolutely great. If you want to get more plant-based dishes into your diet, that's also great. If you want to go 80 to 90% plant-based diet, then that's absolutely fantastic. I think one of the negative perceptions potentially around veganism, and particularly around the kind of ethical side, is that people can be quite forceful in pushing people to make certain decisions around their diet. Mm-hmm. I've never been a fan of that. I'm not a fan of that because everyone responds to dietary changes and dietary habits differently. I think there's a certain level of individualism that we have to appreciate. Someone, what might work for one person may not work for another person.
Totally agree, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's always the way to look at things. So my book, as I said, in the book I've written that, look, if you're an omnivore who wants to get more plant-based dishes into your diet, whether it's, you maybe want to reduce your meat consumption and, potentially reduce inflammation and get more fiber into your diet. And obviously so many people are talking about fiber, and that's one of the benefits of plant protein, is that you get fiber coming along for the ride. If you're someone who's a flexitarian, if you're someone who is plant-based, who maybe wants to get a few more dishes that are higher in protein into your diet because you've just started training in the gym, this is going to be, a really useful resource. So yeah, I think I've always kind of tried to steer away from that pushy element of veganism, which, can be a small minority, but they can be quite a vocal minority, and it kind of puts people off.
Yeah.
I've seen in recent times on social media, people who have been vegan for sort of 5, 6, 7 years, and maybe have seen that their health started to decline, and they've added, and rightly so, in my opinion, they've added some, animal products, whether that's wild caught fish or other things, back into their diet. Mm-hmm. And the backlash they've received has just been really disappointing to see. So I've definitely wanted to steer away from that. I want to just, and again, I want to show people that through my experience of still being strong, still being able to put on muscle and, be strong in the gym, that there's a way to do this. So yeah.
No, and I really, really like that. It's super refreshing because, as you can probably imagine, I have people come on the show and they're very much like, this is what works for me, this is what works for everyone, blah, blah, blah. I teach balance, like I said to you at the start. And for me, I say to every client that ever starts with me, it all works. It's about finding what works for you and what you can actually stick to. Because the problem with most people is 4, 5, 6 weeks down the line, they've given up. They don't enjoy it anymore. It's too complicated. It's too hard. So the fact that you've got a, you know, a vegan cookbook, which is, or a plant-based cookbook, you know, which is simple, easy, flavorsome, and not pushy, that for me is, you know, pun intended, a recipe for success, because you're helping educate people, and there's no reason why people can't go and get your cookbook and add it into their, you know, I'm going to have a couple of plant-based meals a week, or I'm going to have a few vegan meals a week, and all of a sudden, you know, their blood markers might level out, or they might have better results with certain things. So it's, you know, it's nice, and it's educational, and it's super, super refreshing.
Absolutely.
So why is World Vegan Month such an important moment for, you know, this message?
Again, I think going, touching back on the previous question, I think it's a similarly, you know, wanting to share the benefits of a plant-based diet, but not in a way that's going to alienate people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want people to think World Vegan Month, oh, I want to steer away from that because I've had a bad experience with a vegan who told me that I was a murderer because I was eating animal products and things like that.
Yeah.
I want people to think, oh, I came across this guy, Jeffrey. I saw his plant-based recipe book. I have kind of aligned with his ethos. Oh, maybe there's something in that. Maybe there's something in it for me, and it could be quite interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think wanting to just share the recipes from a place of, this is what I'm doing, an educational standpoint, you know, take what you want from it, you know, leave what doesn't work for you, add what is your own.
Yeah.
That's always been my way to do things. I think it kind of feeds into World Vegan Month as well.
Okay, great. And with the, you know, you've obviously mentioned some big health benefits that you received from, you know, going on a plant-based diet, but what would you say is the biggest benefit you've personally experienced from, you know, a plant-based diet? You mentioned decreasing inflammation, you mentioned, you know, still increasing muscle mass and building muscle tissue, which we both know, and the listeners may or may not know, is super important for longevity of life and overall health. But
absolutely. Yeah, I think there's obviously that I've still been able to do that. I think when I went plant-based, I was around sort of 83, 84 kg. I'm kind of sitting at 94 now. So there's clearly been the, you know, the element of building muscle there. But I think the biggest one that I noticed was that kind of sense of just feeling lighter and decreased inflammation. Mm. One of the things that I wish I had done is done blood work before I went plant-based, because it would have been really interesting to kind of see, you know, maybe cholesterol levels, inflammation. It would have been good to see what they were like. So I can almost have like empirical data to compare against.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that kind of feeling of just feeling lighter, clear-headed, no doubt owing to the fact that I was getting far more anti-inflammatory foods into my diet. Mm-hmm. So berries, greens, nuts and seeds, legumes, because my diet previously was very much like it wasn't an unhealthy diet per se. It was like a gym bro style diet, you know, where it was like a lot of chicken, sweet potato, broccoli, which can get you benefits, but there's not much diversity or variety, not a great amount of fiber there.
Yeah.
But again, I think where my book comes in is that if someone was eating that gym type of diet, I'm not telling them get rid of all of the animal protein and then do this. I'm thinking, you know, there might be some dishes in here, like, you know, my berry cheesecake overnight oats might be great for breakfast. You know, the vanilla date protein bars might be good for a snack. The Thai tempeh salad that I've got in there might be great as a light snack, but I still got 40 grams of protein in there. So you're not going to, you know, you're not going to have trouble building muscle. So yeah, I think that's really the kind of approach that I've looked at and how it kind of benefited me. And as I said, I would have loved to have had that blood work beforehand to see where things were and now to see where things are at.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, yeah, blood work is huge, right? But again, you're feeling the benefits, and sometimes, you know, you don't always need to have the data on that, do you? Because if it's like we said earlier, you know, it all works. It's about finding something works for you, and this clearly works for you, and you're clearly feeling the benefits. Which leads me on to newcomers. What would be the first step towards a balanced vegan diet for a newcomer?
So I think one of the things that I like to suggest is making breakfast like a really nutrient dense option. So if you want to get a ton of different nutrients into your diet, I love the idea of doing oatmeal or a smoothie. And with a smoothie, you can add things like berries, you can add nuts and seeds, going to give you loads of different omega-3s and different minerals like magnesium and zinc and iron. Get some greens in there as well. Frozen spinach is a great option. I mean, I love frozen vegetables. I know they get a bad rap for some reason, but they're cost-effective, nutrient-rich. Yeah. My freezer's full of them. So have those in there as well. Okay. And then, of course, add a scoop of protein powder, particularly if you're training. That could be really useful. And then oats, I'd kind of do something pretty similar. Instead of frozen berries, I go with fresh berries like raspberries, which have got 9 grams of fiber per cup, which is amazing. Blueberries in there or some strawberries. And again, hemp seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, nutrient-rich, mineral-rich.
Yeah.
So that's a really good start to your day. And then I also think that it's important to build out your plates with a lot of color. When you've got a lot of color on your plate, you're naturally going to get a lot of anthocyanins, a lot of antioxidants, a lot of different minerals, and making sure that protein and healthy fats are also there with carbohydrates. So I've got a section in my book, which is titled Power Bowls. Now, I love Power Bowls because I think they're a really kind of simple way to really load up your plate with nutrition. So I always make sure I get a source of plant protein, complex carbohydrate, healthy fats, greens, and fermented foods. And that could be anything. You don't have to do the same thing each and every single time. So when you make those Power Bowls, you're no doubt going to get a wide variety of nutrients in there. So those are probably the two things that I think are really, would really lend well to balance in the diet. And then I think, you know, again, get your blood tested, see where things are at, see where you may be lacking in certain things. If you need to take a multivitamin, I think most people could benefit from that anyway, plant-based or not. But if not, I think, yeah, those are the two that I would definitely say. And then the last one actually, which is really important, is you have to increase the volume of food that you consume. So naturally, if you're going to reduce meat from your diet, you're going to have a lower concentration of calories per se. So with plant-based foods being less calorie dense than meat. So if you naturally add more volume of food onto your plate, you're going to cover that caloric shortfall. And that's probably one of the issues I had fairly early on where I was still eating the same volume of food, dropped a kilo or two in an unwanted fashion. So then added that back in, increased my volume, and then it was absolutely fine. So I'd say those would be the ones to focus on for sure.
Yeah. And I've worked with some vegans in my time, and you know, I know a lot of people that have contemplated vegan or plant-based diet. They often say to me, you know, how can I get enough protein in? You know, how do I do that? And obviously, lots of beans and lots of other sources. But, you know, you're the expert in this, so I'm going to let you kind of speak up on this, because I know that this is quite an interesting topic, because lots of people are like, oh, but I've got to have lots of protein shakes. But you don't. Like, there's so much you can do, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think, look, protein shakes are just a nice add-on if you're trying to
It's to top you up, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I think protein shakes have been around since the dawn of time. People who aren't plant-based consume them because they're just a convenient way to top you up. But if you're looking at your main sources of plant protein, you're looking at tofu and tempeh, really great. You've got tofu sitting around 19 grams of protein per 100 gram serving. Tempeh is around 21, 22 grams of protein per 100 gram serving. Mm-hmm. So really good, you know, concentrated sources of protein there. Then, of course, you've got lentils, beans, chickpeas, things like that. Seitan's another one. So seitan's like wheat, gluten type thing. If you've got a gluten sensitivity, I'd probably stay away from that. But if not, another really lean source of protein. Edamame as well, 13 grams of protein per serve. You can bang those into salads. I've got some edamame recipes in the book. Nice. Hemp seeds, you can get, you know, a couple of tablespoons will give you around 6-7 grams of protein. So again, a great addition to like smoothies or oatmeal, things like that. So you've got a wide variety. And I think the biggest key when you're consuming plant protein is to get that wide variety across the day and across the week, because you've got certain sources of plant protein have slightly lower in essential amino acids, maybe one or two, but it's you know, comfortably sorted out once you get that wide variety of different sources across the day, across the week, and then you cover all of your essential amino acids. So yeah, and then if you want to use the plant protein powder, you might want to go for like a pea brown rice option. And again, it's not necessary, you don't need it, but if you want to top up your stores, then you can do that.
It's called a supplement for a reason, right?
That's exactly
what I keep telling people. Supplements are there if we can't get it through our diet naturally. But you've hit the nail on the head with all the incredibly high, you know, protein sources there. And it probably goes to show, a lot of people just assume that, you like I said, you've got to eat a lot of beans, but you don't. So many options.
Yeah.
And it's great. Now, Are there any common mistakes people make when going vegan? Is there anything that you've noticed, seen, heard lots about?
So I think the biggest mistake that people make, particularly when it comes to things like veganuary, because it's very easy for people who want to do that or who go plant-based to go down the kind of ultra-processed option. You've got loads of different processed vegan burgers, vegan sausages, all these types of things.
Corn supplement?
And then I don't know, I'm always kind of reticent for people to kind of do that, because I think naturally you're not going to be getting much fiber. You're not going to be getting a ton of different nutrients that you'd want to be getting into your diet, especially if you're taking meat off your plate. You're taking off a concentrated source of protein and key nutrients like iron, zinc. So you actually have to think a little bit more in terms of, all right, I've taken this off my plate. What am I going to replace it with? What sources of protein am I going to use? So I'm always keen to see people do that. And I know that's a mistake that a lot of people make. Again, I think the volume of eating as well is another mistake that I made, and a lot of other people have made as well. So as mentioned before, increasing your volume is definitely something to do. And then I think, yeah, maybe it's not, I think it's a lifestyle that probably doesn't lend well that well to convenience. You know, I think one of the things that I did, I wasn't very comfortable in the kitchen before I went plant-based, but then when I did, I almost thought, right, this is going to be a lifestyle that's going to see me cooking a lot, see me exploring loads of different foods, trying out loads of different whole grains, nuts and seeds, legumes, different fruits and vegetables and whatnot. And then I really fell in love with that process. And I think maybe people get in a bit of a rut when they eat a lot of the same foods, and maybe they think, you know what, this is a bit restrictive. I want to just go back to what I was doing before. So just really opening your mind up and opening yourself out to trying loads of different opportunities and options with meals. And I think one thing about my book is that I've tried to get such a wide variety of different meals, different ingredients, different food sources in there, just so there's something for everyone. So yeah, I definitely say that's probably certain things that people maybe go wrong with when going plant-based. And I've definitely tried to share information and share kind of tips to help them steer away from that.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, you've got the variety in your book, and you're really trying to help people understand that there's so many options you can have. And I think you're right with the whole ultra-processed stuff. You know, plant-based and vegan diets are meant to be, you know, that bit healthier for you, that bit cleaner for you, you know, getting things from the ground and so on. And it's like, then you're all of a sudden, you know, you're going for your ficken, you know, your fake chicken or whatever it is. You know, never heard that before. You know, or your chicken nuggets from Corn, you know, other providers are available and whatnot. Yeah. But you get what I mean. Like, it's like you're going from processed to ultra processed, and you're going from wanting to have a plant-based diet or a ground-based diet. You know, things are from the ground are super good for us.
And I think it's kind of maybe becoming harder and harder because a lot of these companies are now bringing out a lot of these fake meats and things like that. And look, every now and again, like at a social event, you know, if there's a plant-based burger, I'll have it. You know, I'm not a purist by any stretch of the imagination. No. But when I'm at home, I make sure that 90% of the time it's, you know, it's nutrient rich, it's whole foods, I'm cooking from scratch. And I think that's the way to do it. And you build such a connection with certain ingredients and understanding of their importance for health, and just create so much variety in your diet.
Yeah. I mean, Jeffrey, this has been really, really, really refreshing conversation. Like I said to you earlier, I have many people come on here and they're very like, you must do this, you must do that. You're very, very different. And this is the energy that I like. This is very much how I like to see things and view things. So just thank you so much for your time.
Where
can people find you? Where can people buy your book or download it? Is it on Kindle? What can people do with it?
Yeah, so you can find my book on Amazon. Just look for Plant Fuel. You'll be able to get it on Amazon, Kindle, and hardback. So it's available for pre-order. It's coming out on the 1st of January in the UK and the 3rd of March in the United States. You can also get it on Waterstones, Foils, Blackwells. Blackwells do free international shipping, which is great because I've got a lot of people in other countries, South Africa and whatnot, and the United States have been looking for options to get the book, which has been great. So yeah, then obviously you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is just Jeffrey Boydie. TikTok, same handle with an underscore at the end. I've got my website as well, jeffreyboydie.com. Send out a newsletter every Monday called the Wellness Weekly Newsletter, where I'm kind of just sharing like tips around nutrition and health and well-being. So yeah, those are really the main places to find me. But of course, you know, the book's the main driver at the moment. I'm really just excited to see how so many different people within different walks of life are going to be able to explore the different recipes that I've got in there and maybe getting more plants into their diet and seeing how they go.
Perfect. Well, you've been a star. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope everything with the book goes well. Have a great rest of your day, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye.
Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be doing some TikTok trends for November.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's a lovely Matt Phipps.
Hello.
The thing that surprised me most was how much joy I took in being, like, making people feel really uncomfortable. It's so
Amen.
Good.
Amen.
So good.
Your mum jokes change completely.
My friend the other day, she was like, how tall is your mum? And I was like, oh, she's 6 feet under. Yeah, they did not know what to do with that. And then you let it hang in the air.
Yeah.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone, and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, things were double damaged by COVID.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
What the hell? With George Bertineau. Exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. It's time for some TikTok trends, but if you want to get involved with sending us any TikTok trends, you can DM us at What the Health Show on Instagram, or you can message me personally at George Bert on Instagram. Right, here we go. Hit it. Let's hit it. Let's go.
I've been using this ChatGPT prompt every single day. If you're into health and fitness, you're going to like this one. So every day when I go to the gym, I say, act as a personal trainer. I need an hour-long workout for shoulders and abs, but I want a little back in there as well. I'm a 6-foot male weighing 180 pounds. I work out daily. Now, it's important to give it all that contextual information because it makes a workout that's custom to my skill level. So you can see it gives me that workout right here. And then I can even follow up and be like, I don't want to do planks. And then it edits the workout accordingly. Now this is where it gets really cool. I can actually prompt ChatGPT with my overall fitness goals, like I want a 6-pack in 3 months, and it could generate a full 3-month workout plan. I love this ChatGPT prompt because I can just articulate my goals, how long I want to work out for, what body parts, and I get custom workouts every single day.
Wow. I mean, so much absolute waffle and nonsense. Justin Feinberg, you should be absolutely ashamed of yourself. Putting a program together via ChatGPT to get a 6-pack in 3 months. You can't get a 6-pack from just the gym alone. Technically, training abs doesn't get you a 6-pack. So straight away, your fitness ChatGPT prompt is flawed. abs are made in the kitchen, building muscle tissue is made in the kitchen, you have basically just given people an idea in their head that you think you're going to help them with their fitness goals when you are doing the complete opposite. This is what I despise about the internet, and I actually fundamentally hate. Like, people like this wind me up. Why does he think that's going to help anyone, right? You've got a fitness prompt on ChatGPT, and it's going to make you a program. He says that it knows your skill level. It doesn't. Because also what you're going to do is, because you don't like exercises or certain exercises, you're going to go take that out and take that out and take that out. And then all of a sudden you're left with a program that you absolutely love and it's super easy. And then all of a sudden, because it's easy, guess what? You're not building muscle tissue. Like, muscle tissue doesn't just come overnight. You have to work on things. You have to work to fatigue. You have to work so that your first rep doesn't look like your last rep. You have to work and exert your body. This fitness chat prompt is nonsense. Do not listen to this man. Block him. Thank you. Producer, next one, please. Producer Kieran. Right. We're going on to our next one.
Do you know how to train legs hard if you've never thrown up during a leg workout?
You absolutely have to have thrown up at least once in your life hitting legs to train hard. That shouldn't be the goal, to throw up every time, but like, I thought I was like the hardest worker in the room. I was like, I was out training everyone, working harder than everyone. A buddy of mine who was training under Dante Trudell, he was like, dude, you train like a pussy. I'm like, there's no way. And he's like, no, trust me. Until someone shows you there's levels and this is how hard you actually have to push, you just don't even understand it. And that's why a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I train super hard to failure and I don't throw up. It's like, do you? Mm-hmm. Like, you might think you do, but you don't know that level.
Constantly try to emphasize that, because like you said, somebody showed you that, right? It's not something you discovered on your own, and people don't understand that. They think they're going to be able to work up towards it, and there's always going to be a mental barrier. And everybody that agrees with this, oh, it's always the same story. There's a guy that showed me one day, and that's when everything clicked and I realized what you are actually capable of, and that transfers over in the long run to the amount.
Wow. I mean, shame on you. This is what the problem with the internet. People are going online and they're telling you that you haven't trained legs hard enough unless you've thrown up. I have bigger legs than most men I know. I've never thrown up from a leg day session. I have trained hard. I have trained to failure. I have trained to exhaustion. I have done everything. I have never thrown up. You do not need to throw up for it to mean that you've had a good session. Okay? Because if you're getting sore after every session, that's also not what you're meant to be searching for. That post-exercise delayed onset of muscle soreness, or DOMS, whatever you want to call it, is important, and it's a really important indicator. But why is throwing up part of it? Like, there's no logic to these people. They're just pushing content out there for views and clicks and comments. Do not listen to these people, please. Listen to experts. Listen to individuals that have actually trained people. Listen to individuals that actually have big legs. There you go. Because to grow legs, you have to train them. Most people don't train them, which is why they're probably sick when they train them once every blue moon. Because it's a really, really, really tough body part to train. Okay? Now, we aren't going to have any time for the third one, so I'm going to answer a listener question. Guys, you know what to do. If you want to send any listener questions, it's at WhatTheHealth on Instagram. So, let's go with this one. Cold plunges are all over social media. Are they a genuine recovery tool, or are they just a trend? They are actually scientifically backed to aid with recovery. Cold suppresses things. Heat makes things grow. Okay? If you're an athlete, pre-season, you want to use heat. In season, you want to use cold because you aren't planning on growing. For recovery, I'm assuming you're needing recovery for a sport, for Hyrox, for running, whatever. Cold is great. Compression garments are equally as good, actually. They're super, super good. I'm pretty sure they aid recovery by like a pretty high percentage. I've forgotten the percentage off the top of my head. I want to say 20%, but I'm not sure, so I don't think it is 20%. But cold plunges are great. Are they a trend? Hell to the yeah. Everything's a trend right now. Literally everything is a trend. You've got peptides, you've got cold plunges, you've got saunas, you've got veganism, you've got carnivore. You've got just stick to something, people. Just stick to it. Because I'm confused and I know what I'm talking about. So I'd hate to think about the people that don't know what they're doing and how confused they might be, because there's just a minefield of bullshit. That's the problem. And everyone's pushing their own agenda. Anyway, that's it, guys. This is a roundup from me. So thank you to Dr. Alex and Jeffrey Boadi. Guys, they were fantastic today. So thank you very much for their time. A massive thank you to you guys for joining us today on What the Health. A reminder, you can download the app and listen each week, and you can follow us on social media. We are What the Health Show on Instagram. If you would like some help with your health and fitness goals, your journey, I provide a top-tier coaching service, which is no BS. Problem solving, I'll hold your hand every step of the way, and we will make it work with your life. You can contact me at George Burt on Instagram. The show will be available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. Just a massive thank you from me. I will be back next week at 11 a.m. for another jam-packed show. I'm George. Thanks for listening. Love you. Bye.